what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of a leader? Is it a man in a business suit in a confident pose or directing a team of people? Well, you're probably not alone in thinking that way, considering how positions of power and authority have been very much male-dominated throughout history. So how are the women leaders among us using language to get a fighting chance in this field? Once again, we have Dr. Celeste Rodriguez-Leroux to talk all about gender and today diving into leadership and how language in that sphere varies. Celeste, good morning.
Good morning.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show and chat with you. Let's get stuck straight into it. How is leadership divided based on gender? And of course, you know, looking at this through a binary lens here, but how can you start by explaining that?
Yeah, we sort of need, I think, the binary lens just to understand the history of this. So historically, institutional leadership has been conducted mostly by cis men, and particularly in some fields and areas of the world, this, unfortunately, is still very much the case. This is a patriarchal sort of take on leadership, and it comes from maybe a historical division of labor where women do the caring, as you were just discussing, and men do the leading, and a resulting sort of social view, societal view that men are better suited than people of other genders to be in positions of power, which of course is not true at all. But what's interesting, given that this is a language lab, is that these views are very much sort of like indexed in the language that we use. Listeners may remember previous episodes where we discussed terms such as chairman as predating a more gender-inclusive option of chairperson. And we were saying back then that these terms reflect, obviously, who is likely to chair a company, for example, but then we were telling people to maybe stay away from them because they just reinforce this view and we're trying to move away from that. So it's a really interesting question and a really interesting link between what has historically been a very, very much a male-dominated working world and changes in the language.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on there that, you know, female leaders aren't an anomaly, but they are a minority. So how do they use language to get ahead and gain respect, I guess, in environments that are structured in a way that favour men?
Yeah, and that is most environments, as we know, still. So, and you know, when we say leadership here, of course, it can be leadership at a number of different levels, but what we want is for people other than white cis men to get to positions of power. And so in doing that, and this is relatively controversial because telling women that they need to change the way they use language or the way they behave, and language is, of course, a type of behavior, is controversial because you're sort of asking people not to be themselves. But
yeah,
this happens.
It's a hard one because you don't want to have to assimilate, do you? You still want to be able to, I guess, get to where you are on your own merits and, you know, your own personality and all that, those types of things too. So it's a tricky one.
Yes, it's a difficult one. But there are various examples throughout history of powerful women, very powerful women, who have actually made a conscious choice to use a more masculine speech style. So I'll tell you about these. And what I mean by a more masculine speech style here is, for example, the lowering of their pitch,
right,
the pitch in their voice to sound more dominant. And we know that that is a key aspect of the way that we use our voice. Research on perceptions of pitch in women's voices, so how that pitch is perceived, shows that higher pitch tends to be associated with physical attractiveness, while a lower pitch is associated with dominance. And so someone who is very conscious of this, and listeners may have actually watched the movie about this, is Margaret Thatcher, so the British Prime Minister. And what Thatcher actually did was she received voice training to sound more like a man. She altered the pitch of her voice. She trained herself to use a lower pitch so that she could get stuff done.
I can't help
be
but,
taken seriously.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, I can't help think of, you know, the rise of a lot of AFL women commentators. And I've noticed and I've spoken to people about how you can kind of, it's like they're trying to assimilate their pitch and their pace and the tone of their voice to what a male commentator would typically sound like. And I don't know whether that's an advantage or a disadvantage, but I understand why women who are, you know, in those positions might need to do that or might want to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a really interesting example because a lot of the times the way that we use language become sort of like set in stone, and it's just like the way that a particular thing is done, and so then people become part of that culture, but maybe what they don't know is that that culture is very much patriarchal. There's a really good example, which may be more of an anecdote, if not as we don't really know whether this was a thing, but a couple of years ago when Elizabeth Holmes, who was the founder of a fraudulent biotech company, she was suspected as well of putting on a lower pitch, and some people were sort of assuming that that was sort of like a power play to allow for her company to resonate with investors. And interestingly, most, if not all, of her advisory board was extremely successful cis men. So whether that is true or not, I think the takeaway message as well for our listeners is that how come we are so observant and so kind of keen to understand the way that women use language? Would we be asking a man to change the way he speaks to become a more successful leader? And so this kind of brings up the policing of women's language, and that is something we'll be touching on at a later point in time in Language Lab. But yeah, they're very interesting questions.
Incredibly so. You're listening to The Agenda. You're on the Language Lab today with Celeste Rodriguez-Luro. Now, Celeste, does culture play a part in influencing language use in leadership? We kind of did touch on, you know, the culture of perhaps sport, but how else does that come into play?
Yeah, the culture of sport was a really good example, but you can also kind of take it, you know, take that to be a more sort of a broader definition of culture where you just look at how leadership is done around the world. And cultural norms totally affect gender roles in leadership. So in a culture where respect and formality, according to someone's age or seniority, are essential in communication in terms of sort of defining and deciding what kinds of grammar you need to use, what kind of honorifics or classifiers you're going to be using, then that totally affects how more junior members will speak to more senior members and vice versa. For women in particular, if women or non-cisgender men are seen as lower in rank, in a particular culture, then they will be expected to speak using a deferential style, especially when addressing male counterparts. And so that may actually take place regardless of their rank. So one really good example is some research focusing on the speech of a female CEO in Hong Kong. And this shows that taking on a more masculine approach with minimal feminine strategies may be the way to go in this context. So the female CEO in Hong Kong was seen as adopting sort of different ways of interacting, sort of dropping a lot of hedging, which women are known to do, less questions being asked. And she was doing that because these higher positions are very much still male-dominated in Hong Kong, and she was trying to get there and succeed.
What an incredible case study, and I'm sure there's many more. A great place to leave it on, Celeste. Thank you once again for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.